This is According to Jim with Jim Joyner, McPherson's sports talk show.
Bullpups win! Bullpups win! Bullpups win it!
Listen every day, Monday through Friday, from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com. According to Jim is your source for Chiefs talk.
10-5, touchdown, Kansas City, a 106-yard kickoff return right out of the gate.
The Royals.
Swinging a ground ball to third is fair. Fair ball up the left field line. Here's Cologne, and the Royals win it.
College football and college basketball.
8 to shoot, Hall, the runner. Loose ball, it's good! The slipper still fits!
And everything else that's going on in the sports world.
Inside corner, the Royals, 2015 World Champions!
Now it's time for According to Jim. Here's your host, Jim Joyner.
Let's do this thing. According to Jim on 96.7 FM, KBBE, you can listen to us world, and I mean worldwide, midkansasonline.com, and you can also find us on podcasts at soundcloud.com/KBBE Sports. Jim Joyner, Steve Sell here on another lovely afternoon. And
Steve, it really is.
It is a lovely afternoon. Yesterday, cold and windy and bitter, and I think everybody was crowding around the fireplace throughout McPherson. And
I had a chill.
Yeah, of course you had a chill.
Yes, I always
had a chill on Monday night, too. But today, I mean, this is what we live for. Steve, another fun night of sports. Maybe not as much for Bullpup soccer, but we saw maybe the win of the year so far for Bullpup sports last night as volleyball knocked off the reigning state champion and undefeated Rose Hill Rockets down at Clearwater yesterday afternoon. It also snapped a 48-game winning streak for Rose Hill. And I think that this is something that can prove to the rest of the state, not only that Rose Hill is beatable, like you talked about in your column today on midkansasonline.com, but also that the Bullpups are a force to be reckoned with come state tournament time and sub-state next week.
Well, 32-5 on the year for the Bullpups. Of course, the gold standard for volleyball is 30 wins. 20 wins is a good season. 30 wins is a very, very good to great season. 40 wins, which the Bullpups have done once, is a state championship season, which they were 42-5, I think, the year they won it. But what a great match that was for the Bullpups. And I'm going to be honest, after seeing Rose Hill come here a couple weeks ago and basically just dismantling the Bullpups, I gave McPherson absolutely no chance at all. And I'll be honest, after seeing that 25-10, 25-6 win by Rose Hill in the roundhouse, before a packed house, and you know that was Phil the Roundhouse night, the Bullpups had a new game plan. Coach Doyle and her staff put together a really good plan for Rose Hill. The girls followed it to a T, came out, beat them 25-13 in the first set, which I can't even hardly imagine, having seen Rose Hill play, that they could give up 13 points or only score 13 points in a set. Of course, Rose Hill, showing the heart of a champion, came back. Beat the Bullpups in the second set. But McPherson jumped out 5-0 in the third set. I don't think they ever gave up the lead and went on to win. I believe it was 25-20. And even Coach Doyle, it was like she said, wow, what a great win. And, you know, that's the kind of signature win that can really carry over for the rest of the season.
Well, and I mentioned as we were talking about this that this might be the win of the year so far for a McPherson team. And when it comes to the football team, the win against Buehler in week one was a pretty spectacular win comparing what everybody thought was going to happen at the beginning of the year, because the Buehler team had come off a state runner-up finish with pretty much everybody coming back from that team and a team that absolutely got smacked by Bishop Miege in the state title game, and they were on a redemption tour, and there was everything that went into that game, plus it being the first game of the year and being on the road, that I was thinking that might be the win of the season. It would be hard to top for really any other team, but the talent that Rose Hill team has, and to go down, and especially after losing to them so bad the first time, that whenever I talked with Coach Doyle when it came to the coaches show a couple of weeks later, she was going, man, we just did not play well. They got us out of our rhythm. And when that game started, it was like they were facing Goliath and they were all thinking about it and overthinking. And I don't know what they must have talked about before last night's match, but it must have just been a completely different mindset.
Yeah, she indicated to me that they went in with a different attitude. I thought they played scared against Rose Hill. I mean, they knew Rose Hill's defending champ. Rose Hill had not lost a match all year, and we played that way. We played intimidated, but Coach Doyle said they went over the video. They showed all the things that went wrong, showed where they should have been, you know, the positions they should have been in. And I think, and what surprises me most is McPherson was coming off a 6-match tournament on Saturday. They had tired legs. You only had 2 days to recover from that, and to go down took care of Clearwater very quickly, which was, that probably helped save their legs a little bit, and then played Rose Hill in that third match and or second match, and just played terrific. And you know, you have to remember, this is a McPherson team that is without arguably its most feared offensive weapon in Mandy Cooks. Mandy Cooks was going to be an all-state hitter this year, and of course she tore Achilles this summer and is not able to play this year and probably won't play basketball. If she does, it'll be toward the very end of the year, maybe tournament time. But the Bullpups had to readjust. You know, they had their summer camp, with Mandy, and then to start the season without her. It's amazing they've gone 32-5 having to replace a possible first-team all-stater.
And they've pretty much swept every single triangular this year, with, I think, the exception of the triangular with Rose Hill that was here. I think that's the only one that they have not won every game.
Yeah, they lost 2 matches in the preseason tournament. They lost a match here. They lost to Rose Hill, and I think they lost to Newton somewhere.
At the Newton tournament.
Yeah,
won.
Lost to Newton down there. So, like you said, they have really been good in triangulars this year with just one defeat. So, one thing about this Bullpup team, there are no stars. Cooks would have kind of been the star at the start of the year, but, her sister Cassie's really stepped in, done a nice job. Ellie Barrett, has been there. JC Burghardt is really the glue to the team. You know, she's always getting just mind-boggling number of assists. You got Mickey Bowers, Kenzie Gearing. I know I'm forgetting somebody. I don't have the list in front of me, but Bailey Christ. They're just doing a fantastic job.
Oh, a wonderful week of According to Jim shows coming up this week. Tomorrow is our Bullpup football preview day, and I think that's what we'll typically do when it comes with this football season, when it comes to basketball season. Thursday will be a good day for that because Fridays can be a bit hectic in previewing the weekend, but Thursdays, especially because we talked with Coach Pav that day,
that's just what I was going to say. For those who don't know, we don't just go on the air before a game. There's a lot of preparation that goes into it. Coach Pav comes in for about 30 minutes, and we dissect everything. Some of it you hear on the air, some of it you don't. It's a lot of background for us. He tells us things that he really doesn't want the public to know or the team to know. It's he's got some surprises, but at least we know when the game happens, it's not a surprise to us. So we say that's something that he'd talked about doing. We just didn't want people to know that. So that's a really a good day to do Bullpup football as well as area football. We got some huge games in the area on Thursday. Of course, Little River goes to Canton Galva. The winner of that one most likely will make state. Mound Ridge plays Sedgwick. That most likely will be who is the district champion. I think Mound Ridge will probably get in as the number 2 team. Smoky Valley and Rock Creek is a big game because Rock Creek has played Smoky very tough, but right now it looks like Smoky's the best team in that district. Inman and Remington, one of them's going to win for the first time. They're both 0-6, and the winner still stays some semblance of a chance in the district. So, you got a lot of big games. Heston, they begin district play. They're on the road for the third week in a row, and four out of five. They've got Hillsboro. That's a game they should win pretty handily. So, Football Thursday here on the According to Jim show.
And you hit on something that is an interesting point, and that when we talk with Coach Pav, there's kind of this, I don't know exactly the right way to phrase this, but there's a little bit of a trust and a relationship that we have with him that doesn't happen with normal media and coaches. And Steve, you covered sports for a long time while working at the Sentinel, that, yeah, you get the interviews from the coaches and you get quotes, and sometimes they might let you in on some things. But when it comes to especially radio and TV broadcast, there tends to be this other relationship that you have with those coaches, and it's happened with almost every coach I've ever worked with, that they tell you some things that there's a trust that you're not going to say because it applies some context. And let's say there's a player on the team that has this undiagnosed injury that maybe he doesn't want to come out and say, yeah, he has a concussion or he has this injury, that maybe we wouldn't come out and just straight up say, and you probably wouldn't write in a newspaper. But let's say you get into a game and this kid drops down. If we know what's happening and have a little bit of context with it, it can help understand why some things are happening, or with formations and what they might try and do later in the game. They might try and run this play. Because we have this different relationship with them, it helps. And we know some things, and they tell us some things that help give some context, at least for us in our head.
I talk to civic groups from time to time. I talk to classes. And one thing I stress, they ask, you know, how do you be a sports writer? What do you do as a sports writer? I said, the first thing you have to do is establish a trust with the coaches you work with. And I know, having done it for 42 years, I can honestly say, with the McPherson coaches, with our area coaches, in fact, I have only had one coach in 39 years here, 42 overall, that I did not feel like I had a trust factor with. It was a coach that was, I will say, it was a McPherson High coach. That coach was here until December, coached just that fall, was gone, left the state, in fact, and for whatever reason, we just never connected. But every other coach, I just feel like we got a real trust. And to be honest, I think they trust, you know, there's a lot of sports writers around, but I feel like they trust me more than probably any sports writer. And that's not a knock on the other people, but I've established that rapport, I feel like, with those coaches. And they know if they say, I don't want this in the story, they know I won't put it in the story, because that is what off the record is about. If they tell you something off the record and it appears in the story, you've lost their trust forever. Yeah. They'll never tell you anything again. So that's always been that has been my golden rule number one, is you have to have the trust of the coaches you work with. Now, you don't have to be, you know, buddy-buddy, total friends with them.
Yeah, you never do
now,
that.
Now, across the line, you know, and I'll be honest, you know, in journalism school, they say never get close to the coaches. Well, I hate to tell people, but some of the coaches are among my closest friends. I play golf with some of them. You know, I watch Super Bowl parties with some of them. I go to watching the NC Final Four with them. So that's just the way it is. But I think at a town our size, you can get away with that a little more than you can get away with it. Say if I was at the Kansas City Star. If I was at the Kansas City Star, I know Andy Reid and I wouldn't be hanging out. You know,
I don't know. I think you and Big Red could be friends.
Well, yeah, Big Red, but I don't think
he likes your column. He reads it.
Well, I'm sure Andy's a big fan, but I don't think we'd be hanging out watching SportsCenter together.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about our job, and I try to explain it to people that you get to build this relationship with a coach. And when I think back to my time at Baker and the football coaches that I worked with there, the basketball coaches, I mean, that you get to a certain level with them. And they'll tell you anything. They'll say, oh, yeah, she's failing that class. And they know that you're not going to go say
exactly.
It. And that's the cool bond that happens there. And it's a fun bond and trust to build. We're rolling here on According to Jim, as we have a nice show planned today. Coming up after the break, we want to talk a little bit about the U.S. men's soccer team that did not qualify for the 2018 World Cup in Russia and sort of the ramifications of that happening. And we're not going to dive into all these analytics with soccer and tell you about Jozy Altidore's positioning and Michael Bradley and what he did wrong last night. We're just going to talk broadly about the U.S. soccer team and where it's at right now and how big of an impact this is for them missing next year's World Cup. I also have another crazy theory to throw at you, Steve, in our final segment.
I can hardly wait.
Coming back to the break, we will talk about that World Cup team and what is going to happen with them whenever they try and turn things around in 5 years now to get ready for the 2022 World Cup. You're listening to According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meade Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
Back on According to Jim on a lovely Wednesday afternoon here in McPherson. Jim Joyner, Steve Sell. You can listen to us online at midkansasonline.com. And, of course, find our podcast on soundcloud.com/KBBE Sports. And you can listen to us whenever you feel like it. I love it. I know that Steve always goes home and immediately turns on the podcast.
And I just got a text from my buddy Wilson. And Wilson is pleased we're going to be talking about soccer.
So, Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson.
Wilson! It always makes me laugh when people have the name Wilson because of that movie. It's a tough break for him. Same thing with being named Jenny. If your name is Jenny, how many times do you think people come up and go, "I love you, Jenny"? Yeah, it's a tough break, and you can thank Tom Hanks for that one. Well, last night, the big headline throughout the sports world, and I'm sure that if you got on your Facebook or Twitter and, you know, Steve with your Snapchat, that you would see that the U.S. men's soccer team lost to Trinidad and Tobago 2-1, and the way that the CONCACAF and the World Cup qualifying works is that you play a certain amount of games, and whoever has the most points, I think it's the top three or four, end up qualifying for the World Cup. And the CONCACAF is not a terribly tough qualifier to win. In Mexico and the United States, as well as some of the Central American countries, the United States should have no problem winning this. But, and going into last night, as long as they would have picked up a tie, they probably would have made it. I think they would have made it with just a decision and maybe another decision going the right way for them with another game. But it didn't. They lost 2-1 to Trinidad and Tobago, and now they will not make the World Cup for the first time since 1986. And it's not like the World Cup is the top 8 teams in the world. It's the top 32. And the United States, being 330 million people or whatever it is, could not field the team to make the best 32 teams in the world, while Iceland, with a population of 330,000, which is smaller than Wichita, made the World Cup. They could put together a team, and there is a lot of people that are very furious right now, and deservingly so, and a lot of people surrounding U.S. soccer have not been thrilled with this. And one of the bigger voices that a lot of people saw last night was Taylor Twellman, who is an analyst for ESPN. He played on the national team from like 2002 to 2008. And he had a massive sound off and ripping this team. And I figured we should play it and you hear what he had to say.
What's the point? Because that should have never happened with the $1 billion plus that is going into Major League Soccer and youth development. That should have never happened, and it did, and every single person should look themselves in the mirror. And by the way, that's including myself.
Yeah,
I'm part of U.S. Soccer.
We're all involved
in this. I played for the program. It's embarrassing. The glove should have been off years ago. We should have been having real criticism. And the discussion after Brazil, Max, was can we beat the Colombias and the Belgians and the Argentinas of the world?
Can't be
you kidding me? We can't beat Trinidad on a field that's too wet and too heavy? What are we doing? What are we doing?
And I think that that's the frustration that we saw with this team last night. And Alexi Lalas, who's a Fox Sports broadcaster and former player, he hasn't really sounded off yet, but he's one that I know will and has in the past. Steve, it's not that I want to dive in and say, well, this is what happened last night and this is why they didn't win that game. The problem is that the U.S. has gotten to a point that this is acceptable and that this happened, because when you look back 3.5 years ago to when the World Cup was being played down in Brazil and the United States had a great team and they made it into the knockout round and they played a game with Belgium that they sure had a chance to win. And I was at the watch party in Kansas City for that game, and I was watching as soccer was starting to become this relevant force in the United States, because soccer has been laughed at and made fun of, and their fans have been made fun of for years now in the United States. And they were just on the brink of finally becoming relevant and becoming important fans and people watching on TV and getting this following. And now they put themselves back 4 to maybe 8 years by missing this World Cup. Right when they get to the point of relevancy, they do this, and people across the soccer world are furious.
Well, this has been very educational for me, because really the only soccer that I've paid attention to is McPherson High soccer. And, you know, I really enjoy covering the high school soccer. I went to bed last night knowing this and slept very well. But because, you know, I'm talking to people about Trump and what's going on in the world and that. But when I got in the office this morning, I got on Facebook, and here's all these people just ranting and raving about the soccer. And I said, well, maybe I need to start paying a little more attention, because, you know, our women's soccer team doesn't have any trouble. It seems like we're always, you know, since, you know, back when the 99 team, of course, you know, really kind of kicked off the explosion, and we've done pretty well on the women's side. But the men's side, you know, the United States is used to being the best at everything. We're the number one world power. You know, we're the best country in the world to live in, and it's not even close. But, you know, that we're failing in men's soccer. I guess I did not realize the passion that some of these people had about soccer. So I guess I need to get a little more soccer in my step. But anyway, if this is going to cause such consternation, it's obvious the United States soccer needs to make some changes.
And I think that a good representation of how soccer has grown in this country, and you will be able to at least resonate with this and remember it, was in the summer of either 2011 or 2010, when the Kansas City Wizards decided to change their branding. They opened up a new stadium, became Sporting Kansas City. And when this happened, there was a change in Kansas City, and that soccer became cool. Going to Sporting Kansas City games became cool. And that was when, and I had watched a lot of Wizards games, and I had gone to them at Arrowhead Stadium, in an empty Arrowhead Stadium. But then all of a sudden, they're selling out this brand new high-tech stadium with all these fun players. They go win the U.S. MLS Cup. They go win it. They start winning the Open Cups, the Lamar Hunt Open Cups. And I was at the game when they won MLS Cup. And I mean, that was the first time I'd really experienced much of success with a team I was following and enjoyed. And just as this starts to happen and the U.S. starts to build this following, they do this. And they lose. And a lot of people are blaming it on a little bit of elitism when it comes to soccer in this country, and especially with the U.S. national team program. And that may be true, but this is something that they just cannot have happen. And talk about the money that's going to be lost. Fox Sports paid $400 million for the broadcast rights for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups, and the U.S. isn't even going to be in one of them.
Boy, how would you like to be Fox? I mean, my goodness, what an investment that, you know, they put all their eggs in the basket of the United States making it. It's kind of like if you had the U.S. Open golf tournament, and basically it was all the international players that were at the top of the leaderboard, and you didn't have Phil Mickelson or
and
Jordan
not even
Spieth.
The good international
yeah not
players.
Even the good and well it's I'll tell you Henrik what Stenson. What I liken it to is the World Match Play Championship that NBC has. And how would you like to have a final of Graham McDowell and Victor Dubuisson, or whoever, however you pronounce it, Dubuisson. And, you know, NBC here, they're stuck with 5 hours of golf coverage of two guys.
Martin Keimer.
Yeah, two guys, you know, no personality, you know, two vanilla guys. So, yeah, boy, Fox is going to be hurting, that's for sure.
And, boy, they're trying to get this 2026 World Cup in North America with the Mexicans and United States and the Canadians all hosting in a joint effort. And missing out on a World Cup might certainly hurt that. Coming back to the break, I will give you another one of my crazy theories, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Steve, I can hardly wait.
You're listening to According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meath Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
Welcome back into According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE. Jim Joyner, Steve Sell, rolling here on a Wednesday afternoon. We have made it through half of this week somehow, and over half of this show. We say it every single day, but this show just absolutely rolls.
It really does, and it flies, and time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, we are having a ton of fun. I'll tell you that. Well, I've got another theory I want to run by you, Steve. And it's something I've been thinking about for the last maybe year, maybe a little less, and it always comes up with me during football season. So the NFL, a year or two ago, changed its rules with the kickoffs and the touchbacks because they wanted to help prevent some of those massive collisions on the kickoffs because both teams are just running at each other at full speed. And so they moved the touchback up to the 25 in both college and NFL football. So I have this theory that if I was a head coach, and I don't know if I've ever really talked about this with Coach Pav or any other coaches, and in high school it's a little different because anytime the ball goes into the end zone, it's a touchback. But if I was a college or NFL coach, I would tell my team and my kickoff returner, if the ball goes into the end zone, do not take it out. And we would get the field position at the 25.
I think that's what teams are doing now. I mean, the kickoff has just become an exercise in futility as far as I'm concerned because, for one thing, the kickers are getting stronger and stronger. They're kicking the ball farther and farther. I mean, we're seeing – what was it? There was a 61-yard field goal that won a game a couple weeks ago, and the 25-yard line is not a bad place to start.
No.
Unless you're Tyreek Hill, who doesn't even return kickoffs anymore, you know, it's just – you know, when you look at the odds, you're not going to get back to the 25.
And my thought with this, too, is that, number one, not that often are you going to break a kickoff. Now, of course, if we're at the end of the game and we need a touchdown and there's 5 seconds left, there are situations that I would. But I would not make it very public. I wouldn't come out and tell the media, yeah, we're never taking it out of the end zone. Because then teams would stop kicking it into the end zone. But I would tell my returner, if that ball's in the end zone, take it to the 25. Because how many times do you see, Steve, a team bring out the kickoff, number one, when they shouldn't, and get stopped at the 10-yard line or the 15, or they get it out to the 25 or the 30, and a holding or a block in the back brings it back, and so you just start in negative field position at the 20 or the 15 or the 10, and my thought is, if you get to average starting it at your own 25 every single time, I take that over the one time chance you get out to the 40.
I still think the day is going to come because of all the injuries, and we've seen a ton of injuries this year. They're going to do away with the kickoff. I really believe that, and teams are going to start maybe at the 20-yard line. I just think the kickoff at some point, I think they're going to do a study. They're going to see that 85 to 90% of the kicks are touchbacks and realize it's just a waste of time. They're going to give teams the ball at the 20 or the 25. And you touched on my other pet peeve, penalties on special teams.
Oh, it's brutal.
I'd like to see the study. I'm sure somebody's done one. I haven't looked it up. But how many times is there a block in the back or a hold on a punt return? I would say in the NFL or college, it's got to be well over 60% because you just don't have a clean return anymore. And for whatever reason, they must have the dumbest guys on punt return and kickoff because – if you see a player's numbers, why do you block him in the back?
And then put your hands up in the air, go ahead and touch him.
Why block? If you can see their numbers, you know it's a block in the back. And why hold? Because you know they're looking for holding. So anyway, that is my pet peeve. I think Al Michaels, when he does the NBC games, he says, oh, we got through it without a penalty. You know, so that tells you how often there's penalties on kickoff and punt returns.
So here will be a fun exercise or game for you to play the next couple of football games that you watch. So we can start with the Thursday night game, and then you get into college on Saturday and the NFL on Sunday. So the next games you're watching, whenever there's a kickoff, note where they take it. So obviously if they don't kick it into the end zone, they have to bring it out. But anytime they kick the ball into the end zone, note where they return the ball, and if there's a penalty, and try and balance and say how many times do they start inside the 25, so, you know, the 24,
oh, I think
22,
I think you're looking at 75. 18. I'm saying 75% of the time you would not get it to the 25.
And then compare it to how many times you get it past the 25. Oh. And then try and average out and just think in your head, okay, you know, they've had 3 kickoff returns today for both teams, and 2 of them have started inside the 25, and the other one was at the 27. If you look at the numbers, I think that the strategy that it tells you is to take it at your own 25 in a touchback every single time.
Well, I hold steadfast. My prediction, within the next 10 years, where there will be no kickoffs. I'm going to stick to that. No. Hopefully, I'll be alive at that in 10 years to see if it comes to fruition. But
well, yeah, let's hope so. You won't be able to reap all the senior citizen benefits at that point. Well, you still got a long time to reek those in.
Well, I'm AARP, so you know I am eligible for AARP.
You get a discount at the golf course and at the movie theater.
As a matter of fact, I do get a discount on my membership because I'm a senior at the golf course.
Or maybe you get the discount because you've been a member there for since its inception.
Yeah, and I need to start taking advantage of those 4 o'clock early bird specials. I think they probably have. So
I think that you can find a Denny's or anything that you could go get yourself a nice senior special. Yeah, you'll have your time. Yeah, 10 years. Oh, Steve, you got much longer than that.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, before we get out of here, quickly, the Nationals and the Cubs in their game 4 got postponed yesterday. It will start at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Steven Strasburg, Jake Arrieta. You feel good about that one?
Well, I heard that Strasburg was not going to start. I heard that he was under the weather and Tanner Roark was going to pitch. That was one of those last-minute things. I think the game starts about 3 o'clock our time.
He is officially starting.
Oh, Strasburg or Roark?
Strasburg.
Okay, Strasburg is starting. But both teams have to realize I picked the Cubs in 4. And if the Cubs win, it's in 4. So the Cubs have to win because they can't go against what I picked.
And what'd you pick, the Indians in 5?
I have the Indians in 5. I had the Indians in 5, Cubs in 4. I had Astros in 4, got that one. I did miss on the Dodgers. I had them in 4. They did it in 3. But so far, all the teams I've picked have come through, which is surprising considering how terrible I do in football picks.
Well, fearless forecaster.
Well, that's him, but I give him some input.
So, CC Sabathia and Corey Kluber tonight at 7 o'clock, Yankees-Indians Game 5. That wraps up our show. That's Wednesday afternoon gone. Tomorrow, Bullpup football preview, area football preview. You do not want to miss this show to get you ready for Friday night as the Bullpups will travel to Hayes to take on the Indians in the first game of districts. And we'll also kind of remind you of the rules of district play. So for Steve Sell, I'm Jim Joyner. Thanks for listening to According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE.
According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meade's Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. Make sure to listen to According to Jim every weekday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. right here on 96.7 FM KBBE.